vision, people will fall away on your right and fall away on your left. You could feel deserted by those you thought loved you the most. Even your family could denounce you. I remember how hard it was to even make the really easy shift in what I was eating. Half my family made fun of me. It was crazy. You'd have thought I'd committed a huge sin because I was changing the way I was eating. But you see, what I was now choosing to eat really bugged them, because they saw it as making a judgment of them, even when I was doing nothing of the sort. If you feel attacked, remember that all attack is a call for help. Just keep going your way, do your thing, raise your vision higher and higher, and live by the dictates of that vision. Seek to share with all others what you have come to know of yourself, what you have come to be. Just as you would share any million-dollar gift, share the gift of yourself, your new self, with all those whose life you touch. Your life will never be the same. The heaviness will go right out of it. You'll be on the fast track toward enlightenment. If you feel you still want a practical hands-on tool, I suggest the guidebook to Book 1. If you faithfully do each and every exercise, process, and assignment in that guidebook from beginning to end, it's my thought you'll have given yourself the tools and mechanisms with which to make the wisdom in conversations with God functional in your daily life, which, of course, will also hasten your journey to enlightenment.
Dear Neil, I'm having some trouble, and I wonder if you could help me. The difficulty is, frankly, my own personality. I seem to snap at everyone, bring other people up short, exhibit enormous impatience with ordinary everyday occurrences, and in general, make myself a pretty difficult guy to get along with. What's amazing about this is that it's getting worse rather than getting better since reading your book. I mean, I was always an impatient sort and found myself frequently making others wrong. But after reading Conversations with God, I had convinced myself to change, that this was not the person I wanted to be. I even went so far as to declare that I would never again act insensitively to others and their needs, after which I promptly did exactly that, more than ever before. I don't seem to be able to stop this abrasive behavior. I know that deep down inside of me is a person everyone could love, and some people actually do, believe it or not. But while I feel some love in my life, I also feel that no one actually likes me. There is a difference, and I sense that unless people are in my innermost circle and know who I really am, they dislike me. And as I said, I seem to be even more powerless than ever to stop my unlikable behaviors. Can you help? I thought reading your book gave me great insights, but when I try to apply them, things go haywire. Nick, Kansas City, Missouri.
Hey, Nick, thanks for your transparency. It takes courage and strength to look at oneself openly and candidly, assessing what's going on. This is not a very small first step either, but a giant first step, one that many people never take, and I commend you. Now, first, let me tell you that I'm not surprised that things have gotten worse before they've gotten better. CWG teaches that the moment you declare yourself to be, do, or have anything, everything unlike it comes into the space. That's because in the absence of that which you are not, that which you are is not. You may want to listen to that again, Nick. It's a thing that could get right past you if you're not careful. The meaning could slip by you. I'll say it for you one more time. I said in the absence of that which you are not, that which you are is not. In other words, in the absence of cold, warm is not. In the absence of up, down is not. In the absence of short, the existence of long does not and cannot exist. So the universe will always bring you the experience of that which you are not, in order to create a context within which you more magnificently experience that which you are. Got it? Now, there is a way out of this dilemma. There are 5 magic words I can give you, which will help you to recreate yourself anew in the next moment of now, in the grandest version of the greatest vision ever you held about who you are. These words invoke what I call the process of recontextualization. In other words, they create a new context within which you may place your present experience, whatever experience you're having, and within which you may produce your next upcoming behavior. Here are those 5 magic words. You ready for them? Write them down. What would love do now? If every time something occurs in your life, you'll simply stop for 5 seconds and ask yourself this question, what would love do now? You will create a new context within which you may consider your response. See, when your response to the occurrences becomes your response to the question, your behavior will change. Oh, not every time, not even perhaps the first time, but enough of the time over a brief period that you and others will observe a shift, a very real shift, in personal dynamics. Remember to bless each moment and all that it brings you, especially when what it brings you is difficulty. If the world's incoming data contains something that would ordinarily cause you to be impatient or short or abrasive, bless the moment and be truly grateful. See the opportunity, notice the gift, and turn it into a gift, not only for yourself, but for others, for they will be gifted by the new you.
Dear Neil, thank you for writing CWG1. Still striving for my dream at 52. Hate to give up. Should I? Is there negativity in wanting? Love, Julie, Austin, Texas.
Dear Julie, wanting something is not a good thing to do, you know that, because it produces the experience of not having what you choose. All right, let me explain. Your every thought, word, and deed is creative. Now, if you have a thought of wanting something, you'll produce that thought in your experience. That is, you will see that very thought made manifest in your reality. Therefore, if you think, I want something, that's the experience you'll have, the experience of wanting it. On the other hand, if you think, I have something, then that is the experience you'll have, and you'll bring yourself the experience of having it. You understand? See, words here are very important. Thoughts are creative. That's why I always say, I choose, rather than I want. See, choosing something is much more forceful. It's a more forceful statement. It's a directive. It's a calling forth. Some people have a hard time with this because it seems as though they're giving God orders. Yet, you know what? This is what the funny part. That's exactly what God would want you to do. That's what he invites us to do. Stand in front of the smorgasbord of life and place your order. Tell the universe exactly what it is you select. Announce your preferences. Command of God what you will. This sounds like blasphemy, I know. We should demand of God? Yet I did not use the word demand. I said command. Only if you were a God yourself would you understand this. For gods command, and lesser beings demand. You have no demands, you have only commands. Command the universe. Go ahead. It's been placed there for you to do so. It's been given to you as a tool, the entire universe, that you might recreate yourself anew in the next grandest version of the greatest vision ever you held about who you are. So no, Julie, don't want. For if you say you want something, you may just find yourself truly wanting. Rather, choose, command, call forth. And what is the best way to call forth your next chosen reality? Say a prayer of thanksgiving that it's already been given to you. This affirms the truth of the statement, even before you ask, I will have answered. Oh, there's much more about the use of gratitude, not arrogance, but gratitude, as a tool of creation in the Conversations with God trilogy. You may find it useful to review that material.
Dear Neil, CWG is excellent. One small point, however, gives me a problem. You say wanting reflects lack, and that's what the universe gives you. Later, on page 49, you have God saying, I want what you want. Now, that suggests that God wants us to lack what we want. The semantic precision you call for suggests a God or a universe with a fundamentalist, literalist mindset. Surely a cosmic mind would understand the meaning behind the wording. There has to be more to manifesting than that. Please explore the question of manifesting a new reality. R.D., San Francisco, California.
Dear Artie, there's no contradiction between the fact that your wanting something reflects lack and God's statement, I want what you want. In fact, what the statement means is, God lacks what you lack. Or put another way, the experience that you're having is the experience God is having. And why is this? How can this be? Simple. You and God are one. There is no experience that you're having that God is not having. On the other hand, there are many experiences that God is having that you're not having. Actually, in truth, you're having them too because you're part of God, which is having them, but you simply are not aware of them. See, your awareness is limited. God's is not.
When you say, I want something, it's a statement to the universe that you do not now have it. For if you had it, you would not want it. Now, this statement of not having is very powerful. It is, in fact, creative. Indeed, all of your thoughts, words, and deeds are creative. God's statement, I want what you want, is also creative. What God is saying, in effect, is, I create what you create. And this is profoundly true. Therefore, Artie, want not. Rather, make every statement of desire a statement of gratitude, as in, thank you, God, for bringing this to me now. Do you know the most powerful prayer I ever heard? It's one sentence. Here it is. Memorize this. Thank you, God, for helping me to understand that this problem has already been solved for me. Later, as you move towards mastery, you'll begin to eliminate from your experience the desiring of anything you do not now have. In other words, you'll begin to understand that what you have right now is perfect. This is a very high understanding and a very useful one. It allows us to find happiness in any moment, in any circumstance. This is true mastery of life. Remember, Artie, that what you resist persists. Therefore, hold in gratefulness that which you now have, and appreciate more of all the good things in your life, no matter how small a portion of your overall experience they represent. For what you appreciate, you expand, since that's what appreciation is. To appreciate something is to make it grow larger. Appreciation is that which grows larger. You see, a property appreciates in value, right? Got it?
There is a question I would like to ask you. For well over 20 years now, I have believed that I am living a full, active, healthy life that will go on for at least 125 years, which makes me quite young. However, if we have the ability to live forever and choose to do so, won't the earth get overpopulated? And if it does, what will we do about it? Will our scientists find ways where we can live in the oceans? Will we live on other planets? Bless you, Neil, for all the work you are doing. I have an idea that the 100th monkey is not far off. Love, Joyce, Henderson, Nevada.
My dear, dear Joyce, your letter is the greatest inspiration I've received in a long, long time. I'm thrilled you've found that the principles work, and I'm breathless with amazement at the speed with which God has demonstrated this to you. As to your question, there's more than enough room in the universe for all the human beings who choose to live forever. Actually, we all live forever, but I know what you mean. The earth, however, will get overpopulated if everyone chooses to stay here. So the answer is that we must find someplace else to live. And until we do, and develop the means to get there, it will not serve us to continue increasing the population of this planet in numbers disproportionate to its ability to support us. Ultimately, our scientists will find a way to get us to other places in the universe, but for now, we had best husband our resources, something which we are currently not doing. My friend Dennis Weaver, the actor and environmental activist, is founder and president of the Institute of Ecolonomics. That word is a combination of two words, ecology and economics, and was coined by Dennis, actually, to describe a new way of looking at the ecological and economical challenges of our times. Dennis has lots of information on how we can do this. You may want to contact him at the Institute of Ecolonomics, Post Office Box 257, Ridgeway, Colorado, 81432. And when you write to him, tell Dennis that Neil said hello. We're not paying enough attention to our health, not as individuals and certainly not as a nation. This is the single most important factor in our physical lives, and most of us are simply not paying enough attention to it. Conversations with God observes that our planet is populated by sentient beings of a rather primitive nature, and that what separates primitive beings from the highly evolved beings of the universe is a particular behavior of highly evolved beings, says CWG. They observe what is so, and they do what works. We do not. We observe what is so and do not see it, or worse yet, pretend that it isn't so. Or we observe what is so and do not do what works, simply because we don't care what's so. Or we observe what is so and we say that we care, but we do nothing to demonstrate that we care. This is particularly true when it comes to how we manage our own health. Most of us don't create our health, we react to it. Recent studies show that 50% of all deaths and 70% of all illness in America is self-inflicted. Read that, self-inflicted. Meaning those illnesses could have been avoided. Meaning death did not have to occur due to those causes. And just what are those causes? They could all be lumped into one major and embarrassing category. Lack of self-discipline. Specifically, improper diets, inadequate exercise, use of tobacco, and alcohol abuse. Also, personal living habits that create stress. Recently, I presented a two-day seminar on the messages of CWG. The room was filled with what I thought to be very conscious people. Yet I was amazed at the number of them, nearly half, who, on their breaks, went outside to have a smoke. I observed an even greater number who ate red meat at every meal. We won't even discuss what they put in their stomachs when it came time for dessert. And when we talked about living habits in the group discussion, I could see that many in the room, most actually, were still creating lifestyles filled with deadlines, pressure, and lack of career or personal fulfillment. All of this leads to stress. Robert Roth, in his extraordinary book, A Reason to Vote, reports that stress is the number one cause of chronic illness in America today. That 40% of our citizens, that's over 100 million people, now suffer from some form of chronic disorder, and that those numbers are predicted to only get worse. Roth describes a chronic disease as a disease for which modern medicine says there is no cure. These include heart disease, asthma, arthritis, migraines, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, ulcerative colitis, thyroid disease, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's. Terrible diseases that last for years, many of them causing recurring pain. Fully 69% of all hospital admissions are for treatments of these kinds of chronic illnesses. Sadly, all that hospitals can offer is palliative care. Few providers offer approaches that address the causes of all this illness, although all of them know the cause, just as do the people who are experiencing the illnesses themselves. In America today, we do not have a health care system. You see, we have a disease care system. It seeks to take care of people with diseases. It does nothing to take care of people without diseases, people in good health, to allow them to keep their good health. Yet this is the single most effective way of improving the overall health of our nation and of cutting medical costs in this country. All of the evidence to that effect notwithstanding, our priority in America is treatment of disease, with less than 1% of our trillion-dollar annual health budget earmarked for prevention. What is needed here is education and persuasion. And in my view, a spiritual conversion. Too many of the people who call themselves spiritual are not spiritual enough to even take optimum care of their own bodies. And I'm afraid to say that I've been included in that very group. Yet if we really want to evolve as a species, you know, we may just benefit from taking the first and most elementary step in the evolutionary process, which is keeping ourselves alive and doing it longer. There are signs that we are beginning. In spite of the fact that the federal government still does not cover most alternative health care modalities through Medicare, and that private insurance carriers follow suit, something startling is happening. For the first time in history, more Americans went to alternative health care providers last year than to allopathic physicians. Isn't that something? And it points to a trend that has begun as a result of greater public awareness of the availability of these alternative approaches and of their effectiveness. What is needed now, if we truly choose for the human race to evolve to the next level, is an all-out commitment. That means you and me. So if you're smoking, you may now want to stop. If you're drinking alcohol, you may want to limit yourself to a very occasional sip. If you're eating red meat every day, you may want to cut back. If you're not engaged in a program of regular exercise, you may want to start one. If you're feeling worried, pressured, stressed out much of the time, you may want to try a little meditation now and then, like daily. See, all of these are preventative measures. They will help you stay outside of that group of 4 in 10 Americans with chronic illnesses. And speaking of prevention, do a little chiropractic now and then, not just when you're in pain. Treat yourself to a full-body massage once in a while, and ask the boss if it could be worked out for a massage therapist to come to the office once or twice a week to give those neat little 15-minute hand, back, and neck massages. Watch the stress melt away and the production go way up. Find out about acupressure and acupuncture. Visit an aromatherapist, check out a local reflexologist, and make regular visits to your naturopathic physician. Oh, and by the way, straighten out your diet. You've been promising to do that for a long time. And there's a great deal more you can do. You can begin to do as highly evolved beings do. That is, observe what's so. Smoking causes cancer. Starches make you fat. A constant diet of red meat is bad for you, and so forth. Then, do what works. Decide that you really do care for yourself. Or if you can't go there, decide that you really care about your loved ones, who do not want you to leave your body for a very long time. So here's to better health and better health habits for all of us.
Dear Neil, I picked up CWG in the bookstore last week and have found it to be a truly wonderful book. It seems to clarify many new thought, new age ideas I've come upon before. I do volunteer work with persons with AIDS. I have incorporated ideas from Marianne Williamson, A Course in Miracles, Louise Hay, Bernie Siegel, and others in trying to help people with AIDS. How does the message of CWG apply to AIDS? As I understand it, CWG says that God does not want anyone to suffer. In fact, God does not want or not want anything. He, she has simply given us the unlimited potential to create whatever we want. There is no blaming the victim involved, no right or wrong about the experiences we create. CWG talks about some situations being created by the mass mind rather than the individual. Is AIDS possibly one of those things and therefore something that beckons society as a whole to look within the collective consciousness and seek to express our most unconditionally loving and compassionate thoughts? And what would God say to the individual struggling with AIDS? Of course, I'm talking about the God revealed in CWG, not the angry, fear-based God of some religions. This is a bit more of an esoteric question, but I have been wondering about something else also. CWG says that everything on the physical plane is relative, that we can only experience love if we have experienced fear, good if we have also experienced evil, life if we have experienced death, etc. However, it also says that there are no opposites in the absolute realm, that only love is real. Does this mean that when God has brought the knowingness of the absolute into complete experience through us, and we are simply being God, that the duality will end? Will we simply be perfect love, life, and light, and will fear, death, and darkness have no existence? Is this what is meant by the teachings of many metaphysical schools, that there is no evil? Best wishes, Jeff from America Online.
Hello, Jeff. One thing we know that God would say is that AIDS is not God's punishment for our behavior, or God's revenge for our sexual offenses or promiscuity. Everything that we create individually and collectively on this planet with our thoughts, words, and deeds. The reason for the creation? It's different in every case. Mass consciousness is, however, very strong. Wherever two or more are gathered, means not just positive outcomes, but so-called negative ones as well. In other words, if enough people hold wrong thoughts, and they happen to be the same thoughts, you can bet that they will reproduce themselves in our physical reality. I believe that the worldwide experience, we're calling the AIDS epidemic, is the result of a worldwide consciousness which has surrounded human sexual expression with guilt, fear, and shamelessness for so long. This negative envelope into which so many of the world's people have placed sex, surrounds and pervades our every experience of it. The hatred in the world which is directed toward a particular group of people, and the hatred which so many members of that group of people direct at themselves, has caused this group to be particularly affected by AIDS. Individual consciousness must be very strong to overcome group consciousness. Christ-level consciousness can do it, obviously. And one doesn't have to be at Christ-level consciousness all or most of the time, either. Miraculous healings have occurred when one has moved to Christ-level consciousness, even for an instant. Yet I wish to point out what CWG says about healing and physical conditions. It says that once a physical condition has been manifest, it's a very great challenge to disappear it. We need to know that, lest we get caught up in all sorts of tomfoolery. On the other hand, we know and understand that it is possible to make AIDS or any other unwanted condition go away. The first thing I'd say is, what you resist persists. Therefore, don't push so hard against the experience you're now having. Rather, move lovingly into your own creation. and simply choose to experience it in the most beneficial and evolutionary way. If that means instant healing, fine. If not, fine too. If it means dying from the condition, well, also fine. It is from this place of I'm fine with any outcome that inner peace is found, and inner clarity. And not coincidentally, it is from this place of inner peace and inner clarity that miracles are created. So the first thing to do is, don't fight the creation, don't make it wrong. Simply notice that this is what is. Embrace it. Love it. Now this does not mean give in to it, in the sense of letting go of any hope or desire to get better, any thought of healing. It does mean something akin to what some New Agers call letting go and letting God. In other words, okay, you created this thing, either through group or individual consciousness. Now allow God to bring it to its best outcome. And know that this is exactly what will happen. Best advice yet? Don't seek to change anything that is happening. Seek to change your experience of what is happening. And what would God say to a person with AIDS? I love you. Now go and love yourself. And bring to yourself and all those whose lives you touch the full measure of your goodness, of your greatness, of your divinity. Bless all those whose lives you touch with the inner light of truth. Heal those around you of any false thought. For that which you give to another, you give to yourself. And do not be afraid to come home to me, now or ever. For I will never forsake you, nor cause you anything but joy and wonder in your beingness, here. So move now with the experience you are having. Move into it and through it and come out on the other side in whatever way you do. Yet do so smiling and with love for yourself and for all. Then nothing can touch you, and you will be a saint, and all those you know will be blessed. And is this not, after all, what you came here for? Now, Jeff, responding to the second part of your question, yes, when God has brought the knowingness of the Absolute into complete experience through us, and we are simply being God, the duality will end. That is correct. Will we simply be perfect love, life, and light? And will fear, death, and darkness have no existence? Yes, that is also correct. Is this what is meant by the teaching of many metaphysical schools, that there is no evil? Bingo again. However, there is one postscript which you may want to add to all of this to complete your understanding. When you experience the Absolute and reside in perfect love with the knowingness that it is all there is, you will be satiated, you will be complete, happy, content, and ready to start all over again. For you, us, we are God, Godding. We are life, living. We are that which is, becoming. And once we have become what we seek and choose to be, we will unbecome it once again. Once again, we will give ourselves the glorious gift of forgetfulness, so that we may once again remember and recreate who we really are. This is the divine rhythm of the universe. This is the eternal cycle of all that is. For there cannot be this without that, here without there, before without after, up without down. Nor can there be that which is divine without that which is not divine. And that explains, at last, why God would create evil. You see, in truth, Jeff, there is no evil. Yet we create evil, and we will create less, and we will create not knowing, we will create not remembering, we will create that which we are not, in order that we might know and experience once again that which we are. What we are is the all of it, and so we'll create ourselves as less than the all, that we might look upon the all, adore the all, earnestly seek the experience of the all, and return to the all, then to separate from the all once again in a never-ending cycle. For the all cannot know itself as the all if the all is always in its allness. This is the great mystery which is explained in conversations with God. This is the great revelation. This is why we have reincarnation. It explains that doctrine once and for all. It is why we have that which we call evil. It explains that experience once and for all. It explains why we seek over and over again that which we already have and which we already are. It explains why we forget, why we remember, and why we forget once again. Now, Jeff, do you understand? If not, reread Conversations with God, Book 1. It's all there, put very simply, explained very exquisitely. It's really a rather remarkable document, as is Book 3, which explains why some souls choose not to go back to forgetfulness, but to remain in total knowing and pure beingness. These are the masters and the avatars, and they walk among us even today, helping us to remember, helping us to know. And there are angels, too, divine beings of light, who guide us, assist us, comfort us, and, more often than we will ever know, keep us safe. And then there are messengers, the tellers of stories and the spinners of tales and the weavers of dreams, whose job it is to ignite and keep alighted the flame of wisdom and the light of love within the human experience. I am such a messenger, Jeff. And so are you. And so are we all, if we answer the call. Yet many are called, but few are chosen. For we are the callers and the choosers. We call ourselves to the challenge, and we choose, or not, as we desire, to carry the torch.
Dear Neil, CWG is an awesome book. I am a Course in Miracles student. I'd like you to ask God a question. Does God feel we ought to be vegetarians? George, Harford, Massachusetts.
Dear George, God does not feel we ought to do anything. God has no preference in the matter. It's clear from a careful reading of CWG, however, that given where we say we want to go, and that is to a place of perfect health, most of us are not now moving in the right direction. You see, we say we want to go to Seattle, but we're on our way to San Jose. We're placing all sorts of poisons and toxins into our bodies, George, and eating foods which are not productive of optimum health. My understanding on this subject is that optimum health is achieved by eating live food, not dead food. That is, not the flesh of dead animals, but the living organisms which grow in our gardens. Does God feel this is the right thing to do? Well, there's no such thing as right and wrong in God's world, George. Just what works and what doesn't work, in terms of what you are trying to do. See, in terms of what you are up to, George, live food leads to more life. Dead food leads to more death. That's pretty logical, isn't it? It's as simple as that. So if you want more death, eat more dead food. If you want to live longer, eat more live food. It's really very simple.
Dear Neil, Conversations with God 1 has brought insight to questions which have caused me misery for a long time. Thank you, Neil. I have a question about a statement on page 190. Not only do you fail to prevent breakdowns with regular checkups, once a year physicals, my question is first, how would regular checkups prevent breakdowns? Didn't God say that we create our own breakdowns through our own choosing? If this is so, then what good would a checkup do, really? Second, it was briefly mentioned in CWG that the medical industry purposefully keeps cures from people for financial gain. So God knows that the medical industry is not out for our best interest. Why, then, would God recommend regular checkups? Thank you again. Love, Holly. Sherman Oaks, California.
Dear Holly, yes, God said we create our own breakdowns. And one of the ways we do that is by failing to take care of our bodies, Holly. See, regular checkups are recommended because, as the book clearly points out, there's a difference between the medical industry as a collective and individual doctors. Very few people act individually in the way that they do collectively. People behave differently in crowds. This is true of doctors as much as it is true of anyone else. Going to an individual doctor can produce beneficial results. My evidence is that more often than not, it does. The book does not intend to demean individual doctors, but to comment merely on some positions of the medical profession as a collective.
Dear Neil, I've rewritten this letter many times because I keep thinking up new issues for you to shed some light on. Let me first say that your books are beautiful and seem to reawaken what most of us already hold true under all the layers of bull. What's so sad is that these are such basic truths, and yet you and others like you must continue to carry the message out through much static and resistance. So many of us are caught up in the tug of war between daily survival and trying to create some meaning out of life. Why are we so thick-headed, thick-souled, so heavy-hearted? I realize the answer is a long, tangled web, and perhaps the root cause is our ever-so-stubborn sponsoring thought. Everything we do and say must work toward the advantage of our image, or at the very least, avoid making us look foolish? Where do we begin to unravel the absolute absurdity we've created in this thing called life? You wrote about the possibility of living eternally. Honestly, the thought scares me. What happened to when the soul is ready to leave the body, it does no matter what? None of this seems to tie in with living eternally, unless you're talking about a very different kind of existence from what we now know. Please expand on this. One more thing. Half the country seems to be on Prozac or something similar, and the other half probably should be. I myself have been there too, until I decided to work things out the hard way. I must admit, while on it, it made me the person I always wished I was. But doesn't this somehow affect the evolutionary process? With so many people taking the shortcut to feeling good and living in denial, well, you know. Any comments? Hoping for a new tomorrow. Vesna, San Pedro, California.
Hello, Vesna. See, I have some frustrations here. Let's see if we can unravel a bit of it, okay? You're right, Vesna. Many people are caught up in a daily tug of war between a life of survival and one of meaning. Yet I invite you to be one of the courageous ones, someone who chooses to make a life rather than a living. The reason most people don't choose this is that they hold a sponsoring thought which says they can't. There are a lot of sponsoring thoughts out there like that. Thoughts like, money doesn't grow on trees, or you can't have your cake and eat it too. And hundreds of others, all of which support an idea that we have about ourselves as being at the effect of life rather than at cause in the matter. Where do we begin to unravel the absolute absurdities? With the book, Vesna, with the book. Pick up your copy of CWG and read it and reread it over and over again until you have its contents committed to memory. There is no conflict between the statement in CWG that the body was designed to last forever and the statement that when the soul is ready to leave the body, it does, no matter what. The question should be, what would make the soul so ready to leave the body? And the answer is sadly obvious. It's because the occupant has taken such poor care of the body that the soul would have no desire to stay in it any longer. Why should it, when there are new, healthier bodies in which to continue the adventure? Yes, Vesna, half the United States is on Prozac or something similar, and I certainly don't recommend wholesale use of prescriptive drugs. On the other hand, it's not true that using prescription medications when they are genuinely helpful somehow slows down the evolutionary process. See, I'm not ready to characterize everybody who takes Prozac in this country or in the world as people who are simply taking a shortcut or trying to feel good or living in denial. They may very well be merely seeking to control a biological imbalance in their physiological makeup. Not so that they can feel good, but so that they can feel normal. And not so they can live in denial, but so they can live in peace. Now, I grant you that there are many people who abuse prescription medicines, but you're painting with a very broad brush here, Vesna, and I've got to slow you down just a bit. But I do wish, and I'm sure that you would join me in this, that our doctors and our medical institutions would spend some time, more time, looking at and employing alternative forms of intervention and therapy, alternatives such as meditation, acupuncture, acupressure, chiropractic, and therapeutic massage. I have no doubt that greater employment of these and other alternative modalities in the healing professions would substantially lower the need to use prescription medicines. And I have no doubt also that this would be nothing but good for us. But I don't want anyone thinking that if they're taking medication, they're somehow slowing their evolution. It's just not so. Has your year been, so far, what you'd expected? If so, good for you. If not, why not? Could it have been that you were not very clear as to your intentions? CWG says that life proceeds out of our intentions for it. When this year began, did you get to a place of absolute clarity about what you intended for it? Are you at clarity now? This might be a good time to check in, to make an assessment, to see how things are going, and to renew your intentions for the rest of the year. Because another year will be here before you know it. Another year will have passed. Will you be any closer to your life's dream? Will you be any nearer to the realization of your life vision? Sit down now and make a statement of that dream and that vision. You may want to do so in writing. Make a declaration of what it is you choose, and be careful not to get into too much doingness. Allow your choices to be declarations of beingness. For all of life exists as an opportunity for you to experience being who you really are. And who you are, as I have said many times, has nothing to do with what you're doing. Many of you are still caught up in doingness. You imagine that happiness will come from something you're doing. Yet happiness of any real variety can only spring from beingness. It's what you're being that matters to your soul. For the soul is beingness at the highest level. So decide what it is that you are trying to be. Are you trying to be happy? Are you hoping to be secure? Are you seeking to be peaceful? Is it your desire to be loving? Get clear about your intention. Then move into every moment of now, prepared to fill that moment with your intention in action. Do nothing which does not match your intention, does not vibrate in harmony with it. When you come from your intention, you will find that certain behaviors will tend to drop away. Your life will see a shift, a major movement, a leap of consciousness to the next level. And that is what this, your present lifetime, is all about. It's all about moving to the next level.
Dear Mr. Walsh, I have a question that I would appreciate help with. I'm sure that there are many of us who have reached a point in our lives at which we just don't know who we want to be. Can you furnish me with any guidance in this matter? I have a long list of who I have been, but these hats no longer fit very well. Waynella, Dallas, Texas.
Dear Waynella. Hey, Waynella, if you don't know who you want to be, who does? Yet if you just can't make a choice out of the endless possibilities in the universe, then try this. Simply reverse the question. Who do you not want to be? See, merely stop being who you do not want to be, and you'll automatically be who you want to be. Are you getting that? That's so simple. It's unbelievable. Remember, Waynella, the who that you want to be is not a person. It's not an occupation. It's not a thing that you do. It's something you choose to be. We're talking here about beingness, not doingness. For instance, long ago, I chose to no longer be the thing called selfish or hurtful, unkind or insensitive, self-centered or needy. Took a long time for my body to get the message. It was still going around doing things that came from these supposedly unwanted states of being. But then, little by little, things began to change. I started eliminating behaviors I no longer wanted, behaviors that did not represent, that is to say, represent me in the way that I chose to be. So today I am very much a different person from the man I was even a few short years ago. And as a result of the new state of beingness into which I have fallen, you know, it is something like falling. It's not unlike falling in love. I find my body doing things that only a body which is not being all those unwanted things would do. See, doing arises out of beingness. And it is always thus, although very few people really know or understand this. I'm not sure that you and I are talking about the same thing, but I am sure that this is what Conversations with God is talking about when it discusses who you really are. You're not a human doing, you're a human being. Now, if this is what you're talking about in your letter, the decision as to who you want to be would not be nearly so difficult. And what you'll discover is that as soon as you become who you want to be in your state of beingness, you'll begin to find ways to do that. To do what you have always wanted to do with your life. It's always astonishing to me to see how many people move into their right livelihood, creating the right and perfect career for themselves as a result of their decision to be who they really are. Indeed, that's exactly how I came to be doing what I'm doing today. So here's what I want you to get, Waynella. It all starts with beingness. The answer to your question will be found there. So stop trying to find the right and perfect thing to do and start trying to create the right and perfect thing to be. The doingness that is perfect for you will follow. I promise.
Dearest Neil, hallelujah. I'm holding your hand in such renewed hopes for the future and wanting to live and just finishing Conversations with God Book 2. Thank you for sharing, enlightening, fighting for truth, evolvement, reaching our higher selves. Got to tell you, though, I found myself pushed to no edges and had no areas of uncomfortabilities, only pure comfort and supreme validation like I've never known before. All rang loud and true with what I've known all along. I just didn't have any course of action and must dwell a little longer in deciding what action. I wanted to die from total frustration and heartache before your books. Everything since 1990 has been experienced half-heartedly. I've been numbing out, wanting to just die, really. Have been a student of and believer in A Course of Miracles for some time. This and other paths have afforded me great healing and time to think, study, and evolve. I feel God has held my hand every step of the way, even to your books, which are so plain, awesome, incredible, validating for what I already knew. I'm so glad to hear a man give a woman credit and appreciate her value and worth. It gives me great hope for a new male on the horizon, such as never been my experience in society or with men. Nancy must be so proud of you and not find it cold in your shadow or lonely. I guess the bottom line for now is to decide what to do with the new me that wants to live now, thanks to you. I'll need time to clear up some minor health problems that resulted in me wanting to die for so long. I'll need time to clear them up now that I want to live. How does one thank a man who is taking her from wanting to die to wanting to live? Oh, awesome changes in me, too, in mostly such supreme validation. God has your hand and will bless your efforts, I have no doubt. God has blessed us all through you. Much love and appreciation, Kathy, Pocatello, Idaho.
My dear Kathy, thank you for your wonderful letter. There's no need to be grateful to me for taking you from wanting to die to wanting to live, though. This work was done by God, more specifically by God in you. So thank yourself for bringing yourself to a grander and greater truth. And if it works for you, thank the God of your understanding for playing the role that was played by God. See, God has shown you the light. You have seen the light, Kathy, and it's the light that burns within you, waiting to be shared with others. Don't ever again hide your light under a bushel. Rather, let it shine brightly on all those whose lives you touch. In this, you will be a bringer of the light, and lives will be enriched because of you, and because of God in you, working through you, as you, to remind you, and to remind everyone else of who they really are. Your letter contains the euphoria of a person newly born. You've truly been born again. I'm grateful to God for this gift to you, Kathy. Now all I would choose is for you to change what you call your bottom line. You have said, I guess, that the bottom line for you right now is to decide what to do. I would suggest a revision. Make it your next goal to decide what to be. You will find your happiness in beingness, not in doingness. Something I've talked to many people about many times before, and that's an extraordinarily important distinction between beingness and doingness. If there's anything about this you don't understand, write to us, and you can order our most remarkable book, Bringers of the Light, and its companion piece, Recreating Yourself. They both talk about this distinction between beingness and doingness. They explain the difference and show you how to apply this wisdom to your daily life. I'm very, very happy that the material in Conversations with God has proven beneficial to you and that you've derived joy from it. Blessed be, Kathy. Blessed be. If I had to make a list labeled things that impact my life, I'd have to put feelings and thoughts right at the top. These two are not the same thing, although not everyone is clear about that. See, thoughts are creative actions. That's not how most people hold them in their awareness, but that is exactly what they are. Every thought creates. Now that is something which should be scrawled on every bathroom mirror, magneted to every refrigerator, stuck on every bumper, and tattooed on your left wrist. Every thought creates. What it creates, of course, is up to you. That it creates, however, is not an issue. Even very non-metaphysical, non-spiritual doctors and scientists are now conceding in increasing numbers that your thought about a thing affects your experience of that thing and may even at some level be creating it. Now that's an enormous statement. Its implications are staggering. Now feelings are the language of the soul. If you want to know your truth about a thing, look at how you're feeling about it. If you don't know how you're feeling, if you can't identify your innermost truth, just pay attention to your stomach. Take what I call the tummy test. Dwell on any subject or dilemma for just a while. Now pretend that you have to make a decision about it. Act out your choice in your mind. Is your stomach queasy, calm, quivering with excitement, churning with anger? Pay attention. The tummy knows. The tummy never lies. Feelings and thoughts are among our most valuable tools. They help us to know our present truth and then to create our next one. Can't ask for more than that, can you?
Dear Neil, I have read your books, listened to your tapes, and read your booklets, and I thank you for passing along this vital information to all of us. My question concerns those negative, ugly thoughts that just pop up in my mind. Those thoughts, opinions, reactions that do not reflect the person I have chosen to be. Before your book, I wondered if the devil was putting these evil thoughts into my head. Now I am reassured that there is no Satan, but I would like to eliminate these negative thoughts. I am not referring to our self-talk during introspection. Also, if God speaks to us through our imagination, are bad thoughts, daydreams, coming from Him or me? Kelly, St. Louis, Missouri.
Dear Kelly, negative thoughts are always based in fear. They seldom have anything to do with reality. They're nothing more than announcements of that of which we are afraid. And that of which we are afraid is seldom threatening to us in the present moment. All negativity is fear announced. Did you hear what I said? All negativity is fear announced. That's true of all anger, by the way, as well. Negativity appears when there's something we want that we do not have, or something we have that we don't want. Eliminating negativity is the challenge. We can do it by simply wanting whatever we have right now, or not wanting anything that we do not now have. Now, you might think this is easier said than done, but I assure you, it isn't nearly as difficult as you think. Wanting what you now have is simply a matter of choosing exactly what's on your plate right now. Even if that is something you would ordinarily call negative, choose it anyway, because you can't let it go. You can't get rid of it until you're holding it in your hand. What you resist persists. Only what you look at and own and call yours can you discard. Now, not wanting what you do not have is also easy. It's what's meant by the commandment, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife or thy neighbor's goods. They were trying to teach that principle with that commandment. The reason this injunction has been created by most religions, although, by the way, not by God, as CWG carefully explains, is not because to covet is evil. It's simply not mentally healthy. It creates negativity. So if you want to eliminate negative thoughts, Kelly, simply want to. Choose what you have. And here's a great secret. Give others that which you would wish for yourself. Overnight, your life will change. Now to your next question, Kelly. What you call bad thoughts or daydreams are nothing more than your fears. They're not coming to you from God, since God fears nothing. God speaks to you through your imagination, but you speak to yourself through that device as well. And believe me, you can imagine anything, including the wildest things to be afraid of. So cut it out. I mean that. Just cut it out. Stop it. Don't do that anymore. How to stop having fears? Easy. Just remember that God is your best friend. You know, one morning I was watching Reverend Robert Schuller deliver another one of his wonderful sermons on his nationally televised Hour of Power. He was talking about this subject that we're talking about now, and he said he has a foolproof way of pushing back fear. Bob had recently had a heart attack, and people were writing to him saying, "Weren't you afraid?" And Bob Schuller answered, "No, never." Now, how could he have done that? How could he have never gone into fear or negativity, not even once? "Simple," he said. "I used my magic wand." That magic wand, he said, is the 23rd Psalm, specifically the last line, which the Reverend said he repeated to himself countless times, always to his great comfort. The line in question? "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, that's something you either believe or you don't, Kelly. In my case, I believe it implicitly, in Bob's case, too. I have this idea that God is always on my side, always aware of what I need, always preparing the best outcome for me, even if that is death. You see, that's what Robert Schuller knew. He knew that even if he died, it would be the right and perfect outcome, and that nothing bad could possibly happen to him. Now, when you no longer have any fear of death, you no longer have any fear of life. And it's a great release. It produces nothing but positive outcomes. Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Thinking is a book I highly recommend everyone read. Also, James Allen's As a Man Thinketh.
Dear Neil, I went to see you speak. It was a Sunday night in a rather small and intimate setting, and everything you spoke of touched my heart intensely. At one point, I found myself crying, and I could not stop until this lady next to me, whom I had never met before, hugged me and told me that it would be all right. I did not know why I was crying. I feel as though my soul has been touched, that my wings are ready to fly, but something is making me feel trapped. I cannot seem to get motivated to do the things that I am feeling I should do. I had an intense spiritual experience about 3 weeks ago. I felt as though I had finally awakened from a deep sleep or comatose state, and literally could not go back to sleep for 5 days. I was up all night reading CWG3, chatting to people on the internet, cleaning, etc. Although I felt somewhat tired, I experienced an intense connection with anyone with whom I came into contact, from the lady at the post office to the receptionist at the doctor's office to everyone that I came near. I was also experiencing some health problems during this period, but mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, I felt incredible. I thought that maybe this is what it feels like right before you're ready to die. Then, just as suddenly as it came, this feeling was gone after a full night's sleep and finding out from a doctor that I am extremely healthy. I have tried to produce this awesome feeling of love and great desire to feel joy in myself and others again. I pray and meditate that I can feel that much love in my heart on a regular basis. Instead, I feel a lot of cynicism. I am critical of others, somewhat lost, and a little angry at times. I try so hard to be a nice person, just to be love, but I can't. How can I break through, and what do you think is holding me back? Why can't I just fly the way my soul desires to? I pray that you may have an answer for me. Thank you so much. Lois, Cooper City, Florida.
Dear Lois, it's very natural to go through these experiences during a period of intense spiritual growth. The moment you declare yourself to be anything, everything unlike it will come into your life. This is the law of opposites, and it's explained in great detail in CWG, so don't make yourself wrong or work hard to experience something else. Have the experience you're having. This is one of the greatest pieces of advice I could ever give anyone. Have the experience you're having. Remember, what you resist persists. Then, after having the experience you're having, should you choose to recreate yourself in a new way, decide what that looks like and what you wish to experience in yourself, and then give that to another. See, do what it takes to make others feel that they're nice people and that they are love. Provide for another the experience you wish to provide for yourself. This is a great secret. Forget about yourself completely. Your life is not about you, and it never was. It's about the other, always the other. Yet here is the divine dichotomy. As you provide for another, you produce the experience for yourself. And that is because there's no one else in the room. See, in truth, we are all one. And that which you do for another, you do for yourself. This is why the greatest teaching ever given is, do unto others as you would have it done unto you.
Dear Neil, in a nutshell, I've been having tremendous heartache in my personal life. And knowing everything that I know, I didn't expect it to get the better of me the way it did. I understand about choice and everything that we do ahead of time to set things up for ourselves, but maybe I don't understand as much as I think I do. Because when things get tough, the words come out of my mouth, but I'm still so sad that I don't know how to come out of it, and that in itself can be frightening. My mother, who happens to be my best friend, told me about your book. Reading your material, I felt such love in my heart. That's what I call it when something feels right with me. If I get that heart swell, I'm going to burst feeling, as if I'm going to cry because I'm filled with such emotion. I recognize this feeling as love in the purest sense.